Hunter Doble, co-portfolio manager at the Hotchkiss & Wiley Midcap Value Fund is here. We're talking midcaps and value investing now in the Money Life Market Call. Welcome to the Market Call, the part of the show where we talk with experienced money managers about how they do their job, what they look for that determines their buys and sells, what they see happening broadly on the market, and how they put it all together. And my guest is making his debut on the show. Hunter Doble is co-portfolio manager at the Hotchkiss & Wiley Midcap Value Fund. If you want to learn more about him and the fund, it is HWCM, or Hotchkiss & Wiley Capital Management, HWCM.com. Hunter Doble, thanks for joining me on Money Life.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chuck. Glad to be here.
We always start with methodology, and it's particularly important because it's easy for me to say, hey, he's a mid-cap value manager. But value definitely is in the eye of the beholder. It means different things to different people. And even mid-cap at this point is not always as easy as like, you know, hey, it's this size because it can kind of move around a little bit. So explain what it is that you're looking for that's going to make something actually be the kind of mid-cap value pick you're interested in.
Yeah, sure. So again, as you noted, we're value investors. We look for and invest in businesses that we think are trading at a meaningful discount to what they're worth. And, you know, we adhere to the very simple premise that a business is worth the present value of the cash flows it will generate and be able to distribute to its owners over time. And so we've consistently and successfully employed that investment philosophy since our firm was founded in 1980 over many business and economic cycles. And we're pleased to be able to say that, you know, every strategy at the firm that we manage has outperformed its benchmark since inception. And I guess the reason that approach works is that most investors are affected by bias and emotion. The market tends to value a company based on what is happening today. It tends to extrapolate current results far out into the future, even when doing that flies in the face of economic principles or past experience. Businesses are growing rapidly and producing strong profitability are often valued as though that growth and profitability will continue indefinitely, when what we observe over time is that high returns and growth tend to attract a crowd, managers become overconfident, reinvest back in their business at rates that are in excess of underlying growth and demand, and those high returns get competed back toward lower returns. And then on the other side, you know, when a business is performing poorly, whether due to macro or industry challenges or to a company-specific issue, you know, investors can become irrationally pessimistic about the prospects for that business to improve. Yet, you know, there may be many good reasons why a business prospects might improve, whether the industry cycle corrects or low returns leading to a lack of reinvestment and capacity. It could be macroeconomic conditions improving. New management may be brought in to address company specific issues. So, by remaining focused on a business's long-term earnings potential, you know, we're able to identify and take advantage of moments when the market's excessive focus on the short term creates large opportunities.
So given what we've been seeing with this market where there are plenty of people who were saying, you know, last year, which was so bad, wound up setting us up to where, okay, we may have a recession, but we've taken some of the starch out. Like it won't be a particularly hard landing or what have you. If you're looking for value, you typically want to be buying in when other people are turning away. So have you reached a point where it's pretty easy for you to find buys, or is that something you're still waiting for?
Yeah, no, actually, I would agree with your general point, which is that the last year has created a market environment where there are a lot of names that what we consider to be really attractive valuations, you know, multiples of their long-term normal earnings power. And I guess the thing that we probably observe most clearly is the extent to which the market's concern and fear of a recession has led to really, really depressed valuations on any businesses deemed to be economically cyclical, and very, very high valuations in comparison to names that might represent some degree of defensiveness, whether that's staples or utilities, things of that nature. And again, obviously, on some level, it's understandable that, again, based on the economic data that has come in, it does appear as though there's at least a very real probability or possibility of a recession. And so, people want to be prepared for and thinking about that. I guess where we would disagree with the market is the scale or magnitude of the undervaluation of names that bear some degree of cyclicality. So we've been finding some really, really interesting opportunities, particularly in financials and in energy, but again, really more broadly, even in just names that have some amount of economic cyclicality in their business model.
And how has inflation, particularly impacted all of this? I mean, we tend to think of inflation as something that impacts us when we go to the gas pump or the grocery store or what have you. We know it affects businesses, but what has it done in terms of where you're looking or where you're not? I mean, how much does how a company or a stock can survive inflation factor in right now?
Yeah, well, so I'd say one certain effect of the inflation that has taken place over the last year is it has led to very high short-term interest rates. And so that's had some impacts on financials, and we can get into that later, but certainly also created opportunities as people have kind of, in our mind, somewhat overreacted to some of those developments. It is, as you point out, inflation is something that all companies deal with, and yet some are reflecting that more significantly into their valuations than others. We actually feel one of the interesting appeals of energy is that not only are the valuations extremely attractive, but that it is in some ways, you know, a bit of a hedge on inflation. So it's one of these rare opportunities where if you think of your risk as being, you know, inflation and the impact that might have on your spending power or maybe on your portfolio overall, energy would be an area where you're actually not only finding really interesting values, but to some extent a hedge on the risk that inflation remains higher for longer.
Well, let's put this to work. What's a name or two of a company that really stands out and is kind of an exemplar for the methodology right now?
Yeah, so, you know, kind of sticking with energy, I'd say kind of want to highlight two names, Kosmos and APA Corp. And I think that the two of them do two things. Well, one, they highlight the scale of undervaluation and the kind of valuation opportunities in that part of the market. But they also highlight the way in which when you have an out-of-favor part of the market, you know, the market kind of miss key features of certain businesses. So Kosmos is an offshore exploration production company. They have productive assets in the Gulf of Mexico and on the coast of Africa. And if you looked at the current base underlying producing assets, these are assets that are currently producing oil and gas today, generates about $1.25 of free cash flow. Now, in addition to that, they have this really large LNG project that will be coming online later this year. Interestingly, they currently are spending about 50 cents a share on this LNG project. So if you kind of just looked at it at a high level, you'd see, I don't know, a $7 stock that has something like 75 cents of free cash flow. But we think that that is obviously a mistake. And what we in fact have is we have a business with about $1.25 of free cash flow. You have this other project that they've been spending 50 cents a share on, which actually, if you look at the cash flows the business or this new project will generate once it comes online later in the year, the present value of that is worth something in the neighborhood of $4 a share. So again, in our mind, the base existing business is probably worth something in the neighborhood of 12.50 if you want to put a 10 times multiple on that earnings stream. And then you have this other piece that's worth about $4 a share. So the sum of them together are just a really huge premium to the current $7 a share that the stock trades at, which again, we find to be really attractive. APA is another name that you might recognize that's a somewhat larger, but still mid-cap, E&P company. Again, pretty significant producing assets in the U.S. and Egypt. The production that they currently have generates about free cash flow of maybe $5.90 a share using what we think of as normal earnings. I mean, normal oil prices, something in the neighborhood of $75 WTI, which obviously is quite a bit less than the price that existed through on average last year. It's somewhat similar or close to the current price. So that core piece of existing production produces about $5.90 of free cash flow per share. On top of that, they have this huge discovery in Suriname that they found, which again, using pretty conservative estimates, we would think has a value per share of about $10 to APA shareholders. They also have an NOL that has a present value of about $5. So you kind of add all that together, maybe you put 10 times on the free cash flow the business currently generates, and then the other maybe $15 of value that you describe to the project in Suriname and their NOL, you know, you have a business that, you know, can compared to the current price, you know, could be something close to double. So again, this is a business that as oil prices were high over the last few years, was able to pay down debt significantly. So debt went from $8 billion to less than $5 billion over about 18 months. And it's the management team that's pledged to return 60% of the free cash flow it generates back to shareholders over time. So this is one of the really interesting things about energy at the moment where, you know, again, obviously it would be our view that there has been an underinvestment in new projects and new development to meet what's, you know, kind of a stable and slowly growing level of demand. And part of that is, you know, a function of the incentive that management teams have today within the sector to return capital to shareholders as opposed to investing out in very long-lived and uncertain projects.
And I should point out, Kosmos, it's K-O-S, if you were thinking, if you hadn't heard it and you thought it was spelled with a C, no, it's K-O-S for Kosmos. and APA were those tickers. What makes you sell? What makes you say, okay, I found the right value in the right place, but it's time for me to move?
So two things. One, obviously, if we have a company that reaches our view of fair value, then we would sell the shares. If it ultimately arrives at our estimate of intrinsic value, then that would be a time we would exit the shares. There are other reasons one might sell a share, and that would be if you have another opportunity that's even more attractive than your existing opportunity. So sometimes we'll see opportunities develop, and we'll want to take capital out of a position to put it into another that we find to be even more attractive, whether that's, you know, more attractive upside, similar upside with less risk, something of that nature. So it's largely around optimizing the portfolio. But again, we would have a very strict discipline to reduce positions when a business reaches our fair value.
Well, now we're going to get your quick and dirty take on some stocks that my audience is particularly interested in.
Quick and dirty.
It's Sock It To Me time.
Oh, yes, it is Sock It To You time. It's our lightning round. We call it Quick and Dirty. And my guest is Hunter Doble, co-portfolio manager at the Hotchkiss & Wiley Midcap Value Fund, HWMAX, the ticker symbol if you're looking for the A shares, HWCM.com, the website if you are looking for more information. And by now, I think you all know how it works. If you need to send your request so that we can test our guests with your favorite or least favorite stocks, Chuck at MoneyLifeShow.com is how you do it. You were talking about energy, so let's start in that spot as well. Dan in Williston, Vermont, wants to know about Ranger Oil Corp. That's ticker symbol ROCC.
We actually own a little bit of Ranger. That's an interesting name. It actually earlier this year agreed to a merger with Baytex, which is a Canadian E&P company. So shareholders of Ranger will get $13.31 in cash as well as shares in Baytex. Baytex is a very, very undervalued company itself, trading at something like 6x earnings. They've estimated this deal to be 20% accretive for free cash flow. This is the kind of thing that we think should continue to happen within the energy space. And again, we think this is a really interesting valuation of the combined entity will be a strong security.
But at this point, would you be buying Ranger Oil or would you be trying to buy Baytex?
I guess you'd buy Baytex. It's trading pretty much at the offer price. It's Canadian listing, so either you'd avoid necessarily buying in and getting the 1330 out. So certainly Baytex would be just as efficient of a way to purchase it.
It's ROCC, Ranger Oil Corp. It's a buy, but you could also buy it through buying Baytex, the Canadian stock, as well.
Yeah.
Our next couple of requests come from Richard in Chula Vista, California, and Greg in Short Hills, New Jersey. There's three of them, and they are three different financial services companies. So we're going to lump them all together. Doesn't make a difference who had which they kind of shared one and the others, et cetera. And I'll let you take them in order. I'll announce them all at once, but you can take them in any order you want. So it's Goldman Sachs Group, which I don't think is a mid-cap stock, Ally Financial, and Bank of New York Mellon. So it's GS, Ally, A-L-L-Y, and BK.
I'll start with Goldman and Bank of New York. Those are two large cap holdings that we have at the firm. We own both of them. Goldman, just a premier franchise, very well managed over time. It stocks up to actually held pretty well through all of the turmoil, but still, again, small premium to tangible book value, something like 9x current earnings. We think that's a very attractive and somewhat diversifying position within financials. Bank of New York, I'd say something similar in the sense that what we like about it is that the trust bank business model is an attractive business model in our opinion. It produces, you know, relatively high returns on tangible common equity, high teens, low 20s, effectively doesn't take credit risk, which, you know, in periods of time when you might be moving toward a recession, that's certainly an attractive diversifying feature. And again, also trades at kind of 8x to 9x normal earnings with the capacity to return a lot of capital to shareholders. So again, we own both Bank of New York and Goldman and think those are both attractive buys. Ally is a name that we don't currently own. It has a very attractive valuation. I think it's a well-run bank. They're certainly a leader in auto finance. Obviously, if we go into a recession, that'll be a challenge for the business. Provisions would go up. We generally think the consumer balance sheets are in a pretty good position at this moment, certainly far better than where they were going into the financial crisis 15 years ago. If you looked at credit card debt or debt servicing ratios, any of the kind of normal traditional metrics you'd want to look at to see the health of the financial health of the consumer, I think they're in pretty good shape. But nevertheless, you know, again, a recession will lead to higher provisions and you know, that'll obviously affect Ally. So again, I think it's an attractive valuation. We've just identified other names within financials that we like a little better in terms of risk reward. But certainly over a multi-year period, I would think that Ally will eventually get through this difficult period and from this price, you know, would do well.
So Goldman Sachs, GS, Bank of New York Mellon, BK.
Money in the bank.
Yeah, money in those banks. Those are the ones you're investing in. Ally Financial, again, good company, not necessarily great stock right now, but getting into that pricing level.
I'm just taking my time before making the move.
So hold it if you've got it. You're looking for the right entry point otherwise on ALLY. And last, for Nick in Vestavia Hills, Alabama, it's Floor Corporation, ticker FLR.
That's a very interesting company. It's pretty significant weight in our mid-cap value strategy. It's the nation's largest engineering construction company. Went through several years of pretty poor results, kind of going back to 2018, 2019. They had a number of large projects in which they incurred pretty substantial losses. And that led to the replacement of management. You know, the new CEO came in, has employed, you know, what we would consider to be a lower risk model and approach toward bidding projects. Businesses started to make some positive strides toward what we would think of as the normal underlying profitability that the business ought to be able to generate. And when we look at current, let's say 2023 revenues and our normal margin of 5%, that would produce EPS of $3. If you look at the pipeline that they have in terms of work to be brought on board, we see revenue potentially moving up to the point where they could produce, you know, $4.50 a share of earnings. In addition to the earnings stream that the business is generating, they also own 50% of a company called NuScale. It's a publicly traded emerging technology business focused on small nuclear generation facilities. The current market value of that stake is worth about $6.50 per Floor share. So if you think about the underlying business and put a reasonable multiple on the underlying business and then the value of their stake in NuScale, you know, again, we think that the fair value of the business, you know, could be in the neighborhood of $60. And again, the stock today trades somewhere in the neighborhood of 30. So we think that's a very, very attractive business.
Way to build equity.
Yeah, it's a good way to build equity. That's buy on Floor, FLR. And speaking of buys, well, we have gotten to the point where we need to say our goodbyes to Hunter Doble. But Hunter, this was really nice, a good conversation. I hope you come back and have another one with me down the line.
Yeah, would love to. Thanks, Chuck.
Hunter Doble is co-portfolio manager at Hotchkiss & Wiley Midcap Value, HWMAX, the ticker symbol. Learn more at hwcm.com. All right, we are just about to wrap up today's show, but I'll let you know what's coming for tomorrow. We've got a contest coming, so stick around. You're going to want to catch that. It's a really fun one for this week when I'm headed to the Morningstar Conference. So we'll cross the finish line together right after this message.